Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how you doing, sir?
I am happy to be here. Look, I don't know when this episode is going to come out, Jeff, but we are recording it as 2025 winds down. So, and, you know, things are getting colder here to talk about the weather and be Canadian for a minute. So, but all in all, can't complain. And you?
Yeah, no, great. First of the snowy bicycle commutes. That was interesting.
There you go.
You know, we're getting into winter for sure.
Way to embrace it. And in addition to embracing winter, it should always be said that the Cooler Ring podcast is very interested in embracing AI and talking about AI and how it's evolving both the marketing and sales process and kind of, you know, just kind of continuing to dive in and explore, you know, the impact of the technology. And today's guest, I guess, is no exception to that, Jeff.
Yeah, and I love this this notion of really deepening your understanding of your prospects via AI. You know,
yeah,
we're not just using it for pumping out bad copy or weird art. You know, we're doing actually useful things with it, and I love that notion.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into it and see where we can go here.
Cool. So joining us today is Sam Richter. Sam is a Hall of Fame keynote speaker and an AI technology creator, among many other things. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Sam.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Sam, thank you for joining us. I've got to say, before we jump right into the AI, let's talk about that speaking bit for a while. I'm assuming you didn't just speak about AI, since you're a Hall of Fame speaker, and AI has been a recent, somewhat recent development.
Well, yes and no. if we define AI the way it should be, it's been around for more than 30 years, probably 40 or 50 years. So AI is machine learning. Generative AI is what's new. It's the ChatGPT. So that's been around for about 3 years. So I've been speaking about sales, primarily sales insight. So how do you use technology to find information on others so you can be highly relevant in their sales calls for a long time? And that because of that, I built 20 years ago, started building AI powered, so machine learning powered tools that helped you, for example, search Google, search social media to gain insight on other people. More recently, obviously, it's more generative AI tools as well.
Really cool. And yes, I suppose you're quite right. Not that, as a guy that works with us here, Akula Jonathan, who did his some of his graduate studies in AI, is fond of telling us, AI is not new, guys.
Stop thinking you just discovered this.
I think that that even deepens my interest, because as we talk about the fact that you've been exploring how to make sales and the business of sales prospecting basically a business of being more relevant via having better insights, you've seen how the technology is impacting that, and so I guess let's jump into that. First things first, it seems to me that all these changes are happening, and so much of the benefits of technology to power sales insights still haven't been harnessed by sales teams yet, even if we're talking about the technology that was available 3 years ago. I mean, would you tend to agree with
that? Yeah, I do. And it's interesting. You know, this concept of being relevant or understanding or insight isn't anything new. I mean, we can go back to the 1920s and Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's really all about understanding what the other person cares about. And the sales aspect of that is, can you help the other person get what they care about more efficiently, effectively, profitably than they might be able to do on their own? Or are you alleviating the fear of them not getting it more efficiently, more effectively, profitably than they can do on their own? So it's not anything new. And what I've seen happen over the years is for salespeople, the ability or the willingness maybe to do homework has actually decreased. So for example, before the internet came out, so maybe before Google came out, so 28 years ago, salespeople would take prospects out for two-hour lunches. Now, prospects were willing to go on a two-hour lunch because they knew nothing about us. And so we would learn about each other in that meeting. Well, nowadays, nobody takes 2-hour lunches. Very few people even eat lunch anymore. But that level of understanding still has to be there. And the reason prospects won't even allow us to take them out for a 2-hour lunch, besides the fact that they can't do it, is they think that they already know everything there is to know about us, right? They've Googled us, the seller, our company, our solutions, or they wouldn't be talking to us. Now we get 20 minutes over a 5-inch by 5-inch screen like we're doing today over Zoom. But yet, as salespeople, what has happened, I found, is that we've gone away from relevance and doing our homework to being very data-driven. How many calls are you making? What percentage of those people are doing what we want them to do? What percentage of those people do we close? What's the average order size? How many people click on our links? How many people visit our websites? Open rates, click-through rates. And there's nothing wrong with all of that. But what it's caused is salespeople to have less time to do their homework, which is weird at a time where we have every word ever printed on human history in a device that fits in our pocket. So it's actually really easy to do. We don't do it because salespeople feel like they don't have the time or it's not necessary.
I really like this idea that you mentioned, that the buyer already knows a whole bunch about us. And we've been producing.
They think they do, at least.
They think they do. And at least, they have, they have some information. We're doing some regular research here and finding this as a common occurrence, is that, people are being put on a short list before they, the seller even knows that the prospect exists. So, if in a world like that, where someone is coming to you, what kind of information do these salespeople who don't like to spend a lot of time doing the research, how do they get to the stuff that they need? Like, how do they find that?
Yeah, I think it's simple. Actually, the easiest thing to do is type in the company's name in Google, not in ChatGPT, but in Google. Put the company name within quotation marks, so you treat that like a single entity. And then that's important, especially for company names that might be a common name. And then on the results page, that's fine. You're going to go look at their website. That's Google Preschool. Of course, you're going to do that. But then click on the Google results page. Click on the news tab and just pull up news articles about the other company, what's going on in their world. Another tool you can use is a tool I've developed. It's called You Got Intel, YOUGOTINTEL.com. It's completely free. And in there's a number of resources. One of them is You Got the News. So go in there and type in the company name. Now, in my tools, you don't have to type in quotation marks or anything. That's where the AI, the machine learning, comes in handy. You're not required to know complex Boolean queries. But same thing. And You Got the News, just type in the company name, maybe a word, whatever you want. And on the results page, you can click on Google News or on Extended News. Now, Extended News covers news articles that Google might miss. Things like local newspapers, trade journals, social media posts, those sorts of things. But either one, and get something. What's going on in the other person's world? That's the easiest thing. I mean, because the reality is, we've all been taught value-based selling and all those sorts of selling tactics and strategies. And those are all great. But the reality is your buyers are amazingly passionate about one thing. And that's themselves. So doesn't it make sense that the first words out of our mouth in any meeting or any email or Zoom call or LinkedIn should be about them? Hey, I saw that. Hey, congratulations on. Can you tell me more about? Because the reality is when you talk about them first, you kind of start to break down the brick wall that's always there between buyer and seller. You show that you care. And then that gives you, I like to say the word permission, to ask those more challenging questions. But if you walk in and the first words out of your mouth are, tell me about yourself, it's like, what are you doing? What's keeping you up at night? You don't have permission to ask that question.
And so often, I got a lot to unpack here from a question perspective, because part of me is like, you're talking about the 2-hour lunch with the prospect as being when you used to do homework. And I'm thinking, I don't know if salespeople thought about that as the homework so much as they thought that was the selling, like that was the real deal. And now they're no longer able to do that. I don't know that they view the desktop research homework that can be done as a suitable replacement. And then, of course, to your point, you just can't ask people, hey, like, what am I, what keeps you up at night? You haven't earned the right to ask that. Well, you know, some in many cases, the salespeople are looking for these insights so that they can try to find a way to earn the right to say anything at all, because very often it's going to be an email or a LinkedIn in-mail or an invitation where they're going to be, I guess, dispatching first to that prospect. Yeah. So, like, you know, I guess it just seems to me to be such a different world from that two-hour lunch scenario, which arguably I'm probably more suited to. But when you think about that, what are the types of insights that you see as being the real, the things that are the door openers that actually get you into that conversation, that work in this digital first prospecting reality that most salespeople
live? Well, the first one would be something that's going on at the company, a merger or an acquisition. They landed a new client. They've relocated their company. They're launching a new product, something relevant to them. Now, we sometimes can't find that, right? And so the next one might be an industry. Hey, I saw that. Or did you read about? Or did you see the most recent research report? Even things, current news. How are tariffs impacting you in your business as a manufacturer? Just general conversation. Now, other things as well might be personal information. So, for example, I think it's pretty obvious, yet most people don't do it. If you're meeting with someone, go to their LinkedIn profile, right? Visit their LinkedIn profile. Scroll down to the bottom. See something that might be interesting. Where they went to school. Hey, maybe they played Division I basketball in school. Mention that. Hey, before we get into our meeting, I want you to know I looked at your LinkedIn profile and I couldn't help but notice that you played, you know, Division I basketball at Iowa State. Wow, that's so cool. Can you tell me a little bit about that? It'll just show that you did your homework. It's what you would have done in the two-hour lunch. You're just compressing it.
Don't creep their Instagram profile, though.
You know, yes and no. I mean,
I know.
Creep it, but don't. Just because, and this is, I think, really important. Just because you have information doesn't mean that you have to share that you have the information. But you can use it to ask a better question. So, for example, if you were on somebody's Instagram profile and they just posted yesterday that they got home from a 2-week trip to Europe, well, you probably don't bring that up, but you might use it to ask a really good question. You know, during the small talk part of your conversation, hey, have you done anything cool recently? Do you have any vacation plans? Well, they're going to say, well, I just got back from Europe. Well, you already know the answer to that question. And then you think about the time that you went to Europe and you think about something you really enjoyed. And so you might say, yeah, you know what? I went to Europe 2 years ago. One of my favorite cities was Venice. Did you happen to go there? Well, you might already even know the answer to that question because you looked at their Instagram profile. So just because you have information doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a stalker and show how smart you are that you have the information. Use it to ask better questions.
Sam, I'd be remiss if I didn't try to probe this. Any regular listener to the podcast knows that I love to make fun of salespeople who try to leverage exclusively personal relationships in a business context. So, and I noticed that you seem to be very deliberate in your ordering of the information there. You went from company to industry to current news then to personal. I guess, was that intentional? And how have you seen that change over the years in terms of how you ought to be ordering that priority?
Well, first off, I think you're going to agree with me based on your last statement. I don't believe in business relationships. I don't believe in personal relationships from a business perspective. Now, does that mean you can't ultimately become friends with a client? Of course it does. Friends with a customer, of course it does. But I'll just give you an example. I'll use a personal example, right? I have a financial advisor. I have a guy that does my HVAC. I have a guy that does my sprinkler service every year, right? I've been working with these people for 10, 15, 20 years. I have no idea if they're married. I have no idea if they have kids. I have no idea where they went to school. I have no idea what they like to do. I have no idea if they have pets. And no offense to them, I don't care. Right? Now, do I expect them to know some of that information about me? Absolutely. Do I expect my financial advisor to know if I have kids and what my kids do and what my wife does and what's important to us? Yeah. Yes, of course. So the word, you know, see, I always like to say in my presentations, we talk about CRM, customer relationship management. And when you think about that, we give bonuses for people on the C of CRM. C is customer, right? Hey, if you can increase our click-through rates or decrease our average time spent on customer service call, you're going to get a bonus. M is management. So a lot of companies use their CRM system either to integrate with ERP or even within the CRM system, automate business processes. You know, you onboard a new client and you click a box and you pull down menu and business rules get implemented. And we give our tech people a bonus for doing that. Show of hands to all of our listeners today. How many of you ever received a bonus for having a relationship? Like, what does it even mean based on what we were talking about? See, I think CRM should stand for customer relevance management. Because I don't want my, it's not that I don't want, I don't need to have a relationship. And I know I'm playing semantics here. The traditional, I guess, explanation of a relationship is we know about each other equally. I don't need that with people who sell me stuff, but I need relevance. I absolutely need my sprinkler guy to know that I have two dogs, you know, right? Because I don't want him to get bit. But so it's relevance. It's not relationships.
That's really, I love this notion that you're kind of shaking the listener here saying the personal doesn't have to be reciprocal.
No.
Which?
Unless there's something in common. So for example, using my example, let's say pretend that I played basketball at Iowa State, which would be impossible unless they played on an 8-foot hoop, then I'd be okay. But let's say I played basketball at Iowa State. And I go on somebody's LinkedIn profile and I see that they play basketball. Or even if I played basketball at a different school, I could say, hey, I see that you play basketball at Iowa State. You know, I played it at Missouri State. You know, I don't think we played at the same time, but, you know, do you know so-and-so? So that's where I think it's okay, you know, where you bring it up right away, personal first, because you're connecting with somebody based on something you know they care about.
Is the old adage that people do business with people they like?
Of course. Of course they do. Yeah.
I think a big part of that is finding some way to have a personal connection, even if it's just surface, that allows you to go further. It gives you the ability and the reason to go further.
Yeah. And it's not a technique. It's not a strategy. It's being human, right? I mean, the reality is, the vendor sales relationship, I think it's gotten worse over the years because so many people are bad at it. And so oftentimes, if not all the time, there's that, and I mentioned this earlier, a brick wall that's between the two people. Even we're on Zoom right now. If I was trying to sell you something, there's a brick wall that you're like, what is this guy going to con me into? And if I start talking about me, I start going into my PowerPoint presentation, you don't care. So I've got to do something to break down the brick wall. Sales is pretty simple, right? I mean, when you really drill down to it, it's really based on a concept. And I learned this through an organization I work with called the Summit Group, but it's called Them, Us, Fit, Proof. Tell me about them. Tell me about us. What are our solutions? Is there a fit? Have you done it for other people? And what's becoming more and more important is the them part. Matter of fact, the people at Summit call me the them engine. You know, it's what do they care about?
You mentioned the CRM should really stand for customer relevance management. Mm-hmm. And You know, I think that's a really powerful lens to look through, you know, sales enablement investments and programs and things of that sort. Just, you know, so many people would look at that as saying this is a way of us getting our product information or solution information out. But, you know, probably, you know, more importantly, it's about tailoring your messaging to make it more relevant to those specific prospects at those specific times.
Yeah, I mean, it's not – listen – the relevance part of the CRM is the most important. Why? Because you want to make sure, first of all, first and foremost, again, following the Demos Fit Proof model, are you selling something? Are you presenting something? Are you providing a solution that actually they want, they need, and will work for them, right? It doesn't mean no good to pitch. Like if I come out with a brand new product that might be, yeah, you know, I'll use AI as an example. Let's say I come out with a brand new product that leverages ChatGPT, and I talk for 15 minutes about how amazing this is, and it's great, and it's incredible, and I don't shut up. And then when I finally do pause, the prospect says, well, that sounds really cool. However, at our company, we're restricted to using Copilot for security reasons. I mean, that's a simple example, but that's a relevance example. And how you would find that out is you might say, let's say it's a financial services company or a company that is has HIPAA in the United States. There's certain laws. You might say, hey, you know, a lot of other companies I've worked with in financial services, although they'd love to use ChatGPT, are restricted from using that because of security reasons. They're restricted to using Copilot today. You know, is that an issue for your organization? So just something simple like that without just launching into what you do.
I mean, it's about not making the first 15 minutes about you is pretty helpful in that example.
Maybe the most important part.
Yeah. And let's be clear. Everything I'm talking about is much more on the complex sale, right? I mean, if you've got an existing client or a prospect that just needs to order a part, fine, great. And frankly, you should be leveraging AI to automate a lot of that type of selling. This is much more on the complex side. Or once they become a client and or a customer and they're continually ordering some parts, it might be worth doing some homework to find out, geez, they're ordering this part. Let's learn a little bit more about this company and what they do, because there's probably a lot of cross-sell and upsell opportunities we're leaving on the table.
In that complex sale and leveraging AI to either speed it along, make it more efficient, more effective, what have you, what are the guardrails that come immediately to mind for you? Were times when you've seen the use of the tool maybe go a little awry?
Well, first off, don't use, and I mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, don't use what you find as fact. Use it to ask a better question, because not only can AI be wrong, but Google can be wrong. So I was doing some research and I saw that X, is that true? You know, they might say, oh my gosh, I get that all the time. There's another guy who's also in our industry who's got the same name. That's the other guy, right? So you don't state it. You don't use it to state fact. You use it to ask a better question. The other part of AI, yes, you can use it to speed things up, certainly. But you have to write a really good prompt so it doesn't hallucinate. There's a framework I use for building a prompt, but you have to use a really good prompt or third-party tools. I built a number of tools that have about 1,000-word prompt underneath it, so you don't have to type that in. But understanding how to use generative AI and even Google is really important. The problem with really powerful technology like Google, like LinkedIn, like generative AI is the power of it is intuitive. We don't have to read a manual. We can fire up and use Google. We can fire up and use ChatGPT. The problem with really good technology is it's intuitive. And so you really don't learn, as I like to say, the good stuff. And oftentimes the good stuff is the really important part, so you don't mess it up. Now, saying that, these tools are also very smart. So doing some homework is certainly doing better. You're certainly going to do better than nothing.
I've always said that having good Google foo is among the best possible skills to have. But going to one of your earlier points, and this, you know, one of the things you're just saying is that these things are intuitive, they're easy to use, they're right there. We don't have to, you know, really learn how to use them. We're probably already using them somewhat proficiently off the top. But how do you get sales team members who don't want to do that kind of research to do it and to actually care enough to do that research before they just reach out blindly?
Well, my experience is salespeople will do what they're bonused on. So how do you do that? As an example, I've worked with sales teams and I've said, look, as a, you know, let's say, do you have a Friday sales meeting? Sure. Where you all get around the room? Sure. Okay. Very simple thing to start changing activity and start training. You go around the room. Like right now, you go around the room. Joe, what are you working on? Sally, what are you working on? What's the percent? You know, how are we moving them through the pipeline? Are they going to close? Ask one additional question. And that is, tell me one thing about that customer that our competitors don't know. And you'll watch that first sales meeting on how everyone will probably remain silent. But by the second or third, everyone will have something. And it gets kind of fun. And in fact, even for smaller sales teams in particular, you're like, okay, we know that Joe's working on this big account. This is huge for the company. Here's what he knows about them. Let's brainstorm ideas on how we might use that information to build some relevance, to close a deal. You know, you start to make it fun. And then what I said earlier, I've had some sales managers that have said, if the notes about that tell me something about the customer that our competitors don't know, or tell me something that's relevant, if that's not in your notes field in the CRM, the meeting never happened. You know, so, hey, I closed this deal. When do I get my commission? I was looking at the CRM. It's pretty empty. I don't think it ever happened. You watch how quickly activity changes.
You know, that answer, salespeople will do what they're compensated for. It's,
well, they should.
It's timeless. Yeah. Yes, exactly. No, you build an entire function that is based all of their behavior on incentives, and then you sit around and scratch your head and wonder what you could do to encourage them.
But let me ask you this question, because how many times do sales managers coach salespeople? Well, you're not using CRM correctly. The stage of activity is incorrect, right? You're not putting enough this, you're not doing, and it drives salespeople nuts because they intuitively know, like, who cares? Like, does it really matter that 32% of our prospects are in the opening something stage of our sales call? I mean, is that really... Now, the answer might be yes, it is really important, because you inputting the data, the downstream effect of not you putting it in correctly is we're not able to project our business. We're a publicly traded company. You know, we need to be able to have accurate projections on where we're going. Okay, if there's a reason for it, fine, then track it. But to me, salespeople don't mind tracking and inputting data they know that will actually help them close the deal.
I'm almost at a loss of where to go with this conversation without opening up another half hour of dialogue, Sam, to be honest. I really do think that, yes, all these tools to learn more about your prospects and to get more sales insight, they're all there. And if people choose to leverage them, they can certainly know more than their competitors can, because their competitors are just going to be lazy and not do it. And to your point, I think the guidance to use that research to ask better questions rather than just surface it to make it look like you're smart and to do that and did your homework. Yeah. That is just impeccable. That, you know, if folks listening, if you take one thing from this episode, I would suggest that is it.
Well, everybody's, you know, we've all read sales books or sales training courses, right? on, well, you got to ask questions. And everyone nods their heads. Got to ask questions. And as I like to say, getting back to that word, you don't have permission to ask questions. You don't, unless you open up with something that you know they care about. Now, that can be personal. That can be business. And you know, an expert salesperson will be able to read the room. You know, some people, when they're sitting there with their arms crossed, don't go personal on them. You start out with a business question. Now, if they ask you, hey, if the first words out of their mouth was, how was your weekend? What did you do for the holidays? What are your upcoming plans for the holidays? They're giving you permission to go a little bit personal.
I think one of the things that's also pretty interesting about it, and you know, here at Kula, we have a multi-conversation sales process that goes deeper and deeper and deeper before we get to the, you know, towards the close. But it's almost like you actually have permission to do even more and different research at each stage of those calls. So the first one is going to be much more broad. And then after you've had one conversation, you can perhaps look a little bit deeper or at, you know, dive a little bit more tightly into the industry category and what's happening there and get a better understanding of it through a lot of these AI tools and use that to shape up the next conversation and questions you ask. But are there specific kind of, when you think about this, do you think about specific tools at specific stages of a sales process, or is it all just kind of based on how that is flowing?
Yeah, it's less about the tools and more about, I think you're right, how it's flowing or what stage of the conversation it is. Yeah. Again, I'll self-promote here a little bit if that's okay. I built some tools that go pretty deep. Like I built a personality analysis tool that will tell me exactly how to communicate with that person. And it's scary accurate. Now, do I need to do that on you know, as a professional speaker when I'm speaking with a meeting planner who's reached out or I've reached out to them and they're looking to hire me? Do I need to know their personality on that initial call? No, that's a little silly. However, if I'm a finalist for a very large conference and there's three other speakers who are really, really good and I have the opportunity, they'd like me to speak with the CEO, am I going to learn what type of language is going to resonate with that CEO? Yeah, you bet I am. So there are sometimes that are, I think it's less what tool am I going to use in a specific situation, but more the amount or the depth of homework I'm going to do based on where I am in the state, in the sales process. So for example, if I'm again a finalist for a large account, I might do some research on that company's competitors, not my competitors, their competitors. I might do more industry research. Here's some trends that we're seeing. And that's where tools like, for example, if you ask for a tool, Perplexity could come in really handy. Just go in and say, give me a detailed analysis. I write a prompt. So today you are one of the world's expert business research. Give it a goal. You'd say, I'm a salesperson. I'll be meeting with Widget Corporation. They're in the thermoplastics injection molding industry. Please give me an analysis on likely trends and issues that are going to impact the thermoplastics injection molding industry in 2026. And, you know, you get the reason I mentioned Perplexity is I like to say Perplexity, when you do something like that, you get a 70% of a Harvard Business PhD research report in like 3 minutes, 5 minutes. But so that's where, again, I think it's where the situation, more of the situation than who you're meeting with or when you're meeting with them.
Well, Sam, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed kind of just peeling back the sales process with you a little bit and talking about the areas where AI can help. And just, I think, how you've seen it come to life and how sales teams have interacted with it and changed their process as a result. This has been very helpful.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, I'm not an expert in what is it would be like handling objections and things like that. You know, there are expert salespeople that can tell you exactly what to do and what to say along with the sales process. What I believe is whatever process you use or system you use or technology you use, the more you know about the other person, the more you'll differentiate from your competition. And I believe the more successful you'll be in, again, whatever sales process you happen to use. If I boil it back up to them, us, fit, proof, the us, yeah, you got to know your product. The proof, yeah, have you helped other people achieve their goals similar to what you're pitching to the prospect? The fit, that's pretty obvious. Do you have something that will benefit them? But none of it works without understanding the them part.
Pretty great. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.